Monday, it's a new episode of All Rise, the legal drama where one judge is shaking up the system.
When I take the bench, I'm taking a vow to fight for justice.
One case at a time.
Your Honor,
we're going to trial.
Simone Missick is Judge Lola Carmichael.
Up on that bench. Everything is different.
A new episode of All Rise.
Freedom is at stake. It's important.
Followed by a new episode of Bull, Monday at 9, 8 central on CBS.
Investment advice provided on the following program is on an individual basis. Listeners should not consider today's discussion as a recommendation for any investment and should carefully evaluate before investing. This is your Real Estate Today on News Talk 1110 WBT.
Hello and welcome to the show, Your Real Estate Today. It's Paul Jamison, your host from the Jamison family of companies. But today, it's all about your real estate and anything having to do with it. We're here to talk about it. So we want you to enjoy it. I'm here with my good friend and colleague, Amber Holt, with the Costner Law Firm. Welcome back, Amber.
Thank you, Paul. Happy to be here.
Yeah, so glad to have you and very thankful that we've got this time to share information together and probably answer some questions for folks if they like.
Sounds like a plan.
All right. You're old hat at this now. Well, we're glad that you're with us. We got Jesse on the board today. He is here. If you call, he will be here to take your phone calls and help you get to us so that we can answer whatever questions you have. So let me explain to you what happens if you're a first-time listener. Okay, so you call 704-570-1110. Here it is again, 704-570-1110. If you have a question about real estate, you've got a real estate legal question, if you've got something that you want to talk about related to a rental property, buying or selling a home, renovations, mortgage, and I can't quote particular rates, but I can at least steer you in the right direction when it comes to mortgage. If you have a question in regards to investment property, land, HOAs, neighbors, whatever you want to talk about having to do with your home, that's why we're here. So, that's why you should call 704-570-1110. I think that pretty much says it, don't you think? Okay. All right, so let me just begin the show a little bit by the numbers and see if any of this makes you jump up and go hooty-hoo. Okay. Affordability. Affordability, meaning someone's ability to pay. Affordability. We're seeing a real pinch in this area. Millennials who need entry-level pricing are not able to meet the demand of upward pressure on entry-level homes. Too little inventory is pushing prices upward, causing issues with the ability for them to be able to afford it and to compete. Let me give you an example. About 2 months ago, we listed a home over in the Concord-Kannapolis area for $139,000. Okay? We got 11 offers on that home within 24 hours. We had 85 people that showed up at the open house. And the offers averaged in the mid-150s. Okay? The other thing is that there has been a real distaste by sellers for buyers that come to the table with an FHA loan. I'm not going to go into the full extent of what an FHA loan is. However, an FHA loan requires a minimum amount down, as does a VA, which requires nothing down. But the inspection process, the appraisal process, is cumbersome at best and a hassle. And sellers in this market are saying, you know what? I got 10 other offers. Why am I going to put myself through that? Example. Let's say that they go under contract for that house at 139 that went up to 156 and it appraises at 145. Well, there was somebody willing to pay 156, but according to the FHA guidelines, they are able to get their money back if that home does not appraise at the asking price. And on top of it, that appraisal, if anyone else applies with FHA, sticks to that house for the next, I believe, 6 months. So, and that's FHA, not conventional. Okay? VA is also extremely difficult because I think it puts the appraisers in a difficult position where they have to not only be appraisers, they have to be inspectors. And they put forth minimum guidelines and act like home inspectors. And even with an FHA loan, for example, if there is a rip in the carpet or not the right kind of stairwells or something is not to code that the appraiser notices, then the burden is now on the seller that he has to make those necessary repairs in order for it to close. And the burden on the buyer is they have to pay for that appraiser to go back out a second time and appraise that property and make sure those changes have been made. Okay. So, millennials, you're going to have a tough time unless you got some dough. That's how that breaks down. Okay. Cash related to that. A lot of people think that they deserve a discount because they're bringing cash. Friends, let me tell you the benefit of cash. Cash means
less paperwork.
Yes. And Dodd-Frank be gone, right? To a certain extent. It means no appraisal. But you know, there are loans out there right now. As a matter of fact, Summit Funding has one where there are appraisal waivers. You are not the ruler of the transaction because you bring cash anymore. You're nice. We like you. We're simpler. But don't think because you bring cash, A, you deserve a discount, and B, you deserve a discount. You're not going to get one. Okay? All right. The last thing I want to talk about related to that is where you're found when you're advertising your property matters. Of course, if you're targeting millennials, the faster you can get on their digital device, the easier it's going to be for them to find you. However, for a guy who spent the last 27 years owning and running, not last 27, but prior to real estate, running and owning an advertising agency, you got to go to the table in my grandmother's house if you're going to eat. So you got to go where the audience is if you want to be seen. If you're targeting the next phase up for millennials, baby boomers or seniors or that tweeners, as they call them, or generation, what is it, Generation Z or whatever the heck it is. I get them all mixed up. Okay. All I know is I'm moving towards the geriatric phase. Okay. The silver generation, the
all
baby boomer generation.
All you youngins out there.
Watch it there, Mr. Red. Okay. So, you got to go where they are. So think about where they are. Okay. They're home watching TV. No. Go to the mailbox, knock on the door, and do open houses. Yes, that's my last point. For those of you that say open houses don't work, baloney to you, I say. They do work. We have sold a lot of homes. All right, very quickly, by the numbers, apartment growth from 2016 to 2017 brought 9,600 units to our area. 2017 to 2018 brought 11,674 units to our area. What's on the card for 2018 to 2019? 12,674 units. With a vacancy rate nationwide, statistically, not even in Charlotte, of a difference of less than 400 units. Apartments are in vogue, and it's all because of the M's. Millennials. I don't think there's many millennials listening to my show. There might be.
There's one right here.
Well, that's because you get paid
to. There's two right here.
Okay.
See, look at there.
All right, so two. Two out of my six listeners are millennials. That's still only one third.
You're getting on
my wife's listening. She's not a millennial. Well, she looks like one, but she's not. Okay. All right. So I was reading some national trends that say where rents are going down. Ha. Charlotte's got a lot. Rental potential is huge, that is. Apartments are growing and coming in, as you saw from the previous stat 12,674 units. But remember, eventually, they all want to be in a home. Statistically, they show that two-thirds of millennials eventually see themselves in a home. That would be two-thirds. So if you're in that, that's great. If you're not, you too, then... you know, hey, we'll just figure it out. The show, Your Real Estate Today, Paul Jamison with the Jamison family of companies, Jamison Realty, Jamison Property Investments, and Jamison Property Management here with Amber Holt with Costner Law. Jesse on the board, the show, Your Real Estate Today here, 1110-993 WBT. Stay with us. Welcome back to Real Estate Country, where picking and grinning, choosing and no losing is what you'll find. I just made that up. That's you can tell, I'm sure.
That was good, Paul.
I think
good.
That should be your new tagline.
No, no.
Come on,
survey says no. Hey, it's the show, Your Real Estate Today. Thanks for coming back with us. I'm Paul Jamison, your host from the Jamison family of companies, Jamison Realty, Jamison Property Investments, Jamison Property Management, here with Amber Holt from Costner Law Firm. We are here live from the WBT studios to answer any and all real estate questions you may have. And if you don't call because you don't want to contribute, then that's fine. But if you do want to contribute or you have a question, 704-570-1110. All right. Amber and I are going to take a subject head on. We're just going to do it. So stay with us here. We've got a lot of things to talk about today, and somewhere along in the show today, we're going to have some rapid-fire questions for Miss Amber that she is prepared for. And I'm going to continue to talk a little bit about investment property and other discussion points around the stock market and how it changes and cohabitates with real estate. 704-570-1110 if you want to get involved or have questions in our conversation. All right. Amber, should the pet and number of pets be on the lease?
So first, I just wanted my disclaimer here that I have three dogs of my own. I love pets. But if you're renting your property, you should include both the number of pets and the type of pet and potentially even gender, whatever, so that way if they do have a different pet that's there, you would have a claim for breach of contract if another pet that was unauthorized came in. If it's not mentioned, mm-hmm. nothing you can do about it.
Right. So if they decide to no longer call their pet Scruffy and it goes through a name change and becomes Buffy,
I don't know that you need to throw the name in there.
Okay.
just the type. Okay. Type and gender.
We actually do have leases with some pet names in them, too. It's pretty fun. I guess we should do pictures like, you know, portfolio pictures. Driver's license, pet picture. Okay. Should the pet and number of pets be on the lease? Yes?
Yes.
Okay, yes. So this happens all the time. All of a sudden, you go in and we're doing an inspection, and lo and behold, they have decided that a dog needs to be added to their family. And they didn't have a dog, and we didn't know they had a dog, and we didn't get the owner's, landlord's permission for them to have a dog. Can we evict them?
If the contract said that unauthorized pets are not allowed, and the pet wasn't authorized, mm-hmm. but you might have a simpler solution. I mean, honestly, it's probably something that they could get worked out as long as if the contract were to require a fee, it's probably something that they could add at a later date.
Yeah. You know, I think the biggest challenge that we have faced have been, and we have a policy where, of course, the landlord can say no pets. And all of a sudden, the family gets in, and there's a dog that becomes a part of their family. We find it in an inspection, and there's a clause in there that says they've got 24 hours to remedy the situation. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times, we also have breed restrictions, i.e., pit, German Shepherd, Rottie, Doberman, and therefore not just for policy reasons, but insurance reasons.
Sure.
Okay. And I think the largest and most interesting challenge we faced in that is they say that the dog breed is a terrier.
Okay.
Whenever they say it's a terrier, almost 80% of the time, you know what it is.
It's a pit bull terrier.
That's right.
It's a terrier, though.
Yeah. So we're like, can you send us a picture? Boom. Pit. Okay. So can you refuse a renter?
For a pet?
Yeah.
If it's in your contract. I mean, if it's in your contract that you don't allow pets, you know that it's going to get us into that service animal, though. If somebody
That's
has
where
a,
we're going.
If we're, somebody we're has a legitimate up. Service animal.
Okay. So, if they've got a service animal, and they say it is a service animal, what can you do?
So, there are two questions that the ADA lets you ask.
Okay.
Is this a service dog required because of a disability, and what is it trained to do to mitigate that disability? You can't ask about the disability, but you can ask those two questions as an owner.
Okay. So what if they say that the dog is there to make me happy?
So the ADA covers that. They say on their website that animals whose sole function is to provide emotional support, comfort, therapy, companionship, therapeutic benefits, or to promote emotional well-being are not service animals. And you'll get into, when you get into some states there, they do broaden that a little bit in certain states, but that is what it says on the website.
Okay. All right. So just because it has the little jacket on it that says service animal doesn't especially mean that it is one.
Not necessarily.
Okay.
It may be, though. So you ask those two questions, and if it performs a function to mitigate the disability, then...
Okay.
It's
so if the dog can roll over and play dead and it makes them laugh, that is not considered a task. Okay. All right. Well, what about all the people that bring their pets into the department stores, restaurants? I'm surprised at places where I see animals.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, as I was telling you, North Carolina has adopted the ADA definition that I was reading earlier, but it does say in there for North Carolina that if there's an animal that's, you know, urinating somewhere in the property or they're misbehaving or they're acting aggressively, that you could ask that dog to leave because there are certain parameters and requirements that are required of service dogs there's certain expectations that the dog is not going to be disruptive to the other patrons.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep, I agree with that. So The only last thing I'll put forth is the ADA law does not just specify dogs.
Correct. Pets.
Pets. So mini ponies that perform a function, lizards that perform a function, cats that perform a function.
To mitigate a disability.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Service animals.
You know, the interesting question to that, if someone had one of those little ponies, would be what about an HOA and their rules and who wins?
Oh yeah, we're not going to get into that.
I mean that would be interesting. Nothing like complicating the issue. Yeah, she's giving me the really look, the evil eye look right now. So we'll leave that alone. Okay. So all right. So disposition of the security deposit. This is one of the most volatile areas of the investment property business. And I just want to share with you all, there are very specific rules and guidelines that go along with the disposition of a security deposit. First of all, if you move out of a piece of property, the inspection is done not when you're there. It's done when you're not there. So the review of the property, we have what's called a move-in checklist. When you move in, we give you 3 days to bring back the checklist marking any blemishes, holes, stains, issues, faults, changes, hot dogs, pizza, spaghetti, whatever, about that piece of property. If you don't return it, that means the property is perfect. If you return it and mark it, it is reviewed and signed. Are we got to go to break? Okay. We got 30 seconds? Okay. So if that comes back and you move out and there is damage to the property, we're going to talk about it, sounds like. But that security deposit is not automatically fully refunded, with some exceptions, and we're going to tell you what those exceptions are when we come back. So we're going to continue talking a little bit about security deposits, and then we're going to go to Amber and ask the questions everyone wants to know from a real estate attorney. Stay with us. We'll be right back to Show Your Real Estate Today here on News 1110 99.3 WBT. Welcome. Welcome back. Jesse, stop dancing. Get off the table. Come on now. Get back to work. Jesse. Welcome back to the show, Your Real Estate Today. We're live from the WBT studios down here in beautiful downtown Charlotte. Wherever you're listening, wherever you are, thank you for being out there. We're glad to have your ears today. This is the show, Your Real Estate Today. I'm Paul Jamison, your host, Jamison Realty, Jamison Property Investments, Jamison Property Management, here with the one, the only, Miss Amber Holt with Kostner Law Firm. I said that in one breath. I did that
pretty
well.
You did.
That was pretty good, huh? All right, so we are live. This is a show about real estate. Anything having to do with it, talk about it, be with it, know it, get with it, and change it. If you want to ask it, we're live. We're here. Otherwise, we've got a lot to do and talk about. 704-570-1110. 704-570-1110. You call. Just remember, if you're thinking it, you probably help somebody by sharing it. 704-570-1110. Don't be scared. That's okay. All right. So, Amber, there are some things. I did some research over the weekend, and what I found is probably there's 500 shows worth of these questions. So you have job security.
Wow. All right.
Around how real estate questions that people have always wanted to ask a real estate attorney. Some of these require, I'm sure, details above and beyond what we could ever ask. But there are some great questions here. And
okay.
The first, woo, party.
Bless you.
Okay.
Goodness.
All right. Thank you. Hey, at least I didn't do it all over the microphone like last time. Okay. All right. Is the seller liable if issues arise with the home that was sold that they were not aware of?
So the short answer is no. Okay. But let me tell you why. I'm going to get a little technical here for a second.
Okay, here we go. Technical preparation.
The NC GenStat, and we're talking about North Carolina here. So the NC GenStat 47E-4 says, a seller transferring residential real estate property shall disclose in writing to the buyer, agent, subagent, as applicable, all material defects of the property that are known at the time the property is offered for sale.
Right.
So that's known defects.
Right. So earlier today on the show, not to share the specifics, but to share the theme, the question was about the seller, but it also includes the real estate agent. Let's say, for example, I am walking around the house and I see something that is classified as a material fact. A material fact means something that adversely affects the value of the property. Agree?
Correct.
Okay. Let's say, for example, I walk around the house and I see something that adversely affects the value of the property. It is not just the seller's obligation to disclose. It is also the realtor's
correct.
Obligation to disclose.
As an agent for the seller, that's correct.
You know what you tell it. And there have been situations where I have noticed something and I've asked the seller, and the seller says, I don't want you to tell that. You're under confidential agreement with me, and you have signed this listing agreement, and that is going to hurt my sale. And I said, I quit, because I'm not going to lie. If I see it, I say it.
Sure.
And I'm not going to put that seller or myself at risk.
For liability, absolutely.
And it's a serious stuff, folks. This question, and the reason it's first, is because it's one of the most difficult questions that you can face in a transaction. You know, and it's one you never want to have come back. Just remember, when you place your head on the pillow, do you sleep or do you not sleep? It would make me crazy.
Sure.
So I love this question. And if you see it, you say it. And if it's a material fact. Now, if you see a sheetrock tape that is off, a cosmetic issue, or a small tear in the carpet, does that adversely affect the value of the property materially? No, it does not. It's cosmetic. But material fact, it does cover. Okay. Next question. Do I have to pay unpaid property taxes owed by the seller?
So this is something that really you should be catching as a closing attorney, right? We would be catching this and then discovering that there is unpaid taxes. That's going to go into the settlement statement being paid by the seller.
Right.
So we're going to catch that before it gets to the closing.
Okay. Unfortunately, not everybody understands the reason why you would want to use a closing attorney.
That's one. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. There's many, but that's
right.
One.
And then, you know, the title insurance question, you know, also kind of comes forward. Not just an unpaid property tax liability, but also potentially a lien.
Sure.
That surfaces. A valid lien, I guess I should say.
Sure.
Yeah. So if they did not use an attorney and those property taxes were in arrears and they were not discovered or settled, I would assume that those taxes travel with the property, correct?
They do.
Okay. Jeez. Use a closing attorney, folks. Good gosh. Why in the world would you ever not do that? And, you know, title insurance, too. You know, that is one of the biggest ones that I've seen happen. It happened last month where in the title search, the attorney, not Costner Law Firm, missed a lien. I remember talking to Josh about this.
Mm-hmm.
And they threatened foreclosure on the guy's home.
Wow.
Title insurance came forward and covered it.
Wow.
So thankful to see that. Okay. What are my options on removing my name from a mortgage? This happens typically in a domestic separation.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can refinance and get your name taken off of the mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
So that basically the new refinanced mortgage is going to have the other spouse's name.
Right.
Because you're talking about a separation.
Yeah, and a lot of times, though, if the other person cannot qualify on their own, the bank's not going to refinance it, and you're there. And I've heard it happen multiple times when they believe there's a separation agreement and they divide the property. The bank is going to keep your name. They don't care whether you're together or not.
No, they don't.
So domestically, you're still there,
sure.
Right? That's... Get your name off there.
You might have to sell it, right? Yeah. Pay it off.
That's right.
That's the other way to, not to be cheeky, but that's the other way. Pay it off.
It is. It is. And I remember years and years ago having a closing where that happened. So what are the options? It says here, my finance and I are both on the title of the home, but I'm only... the only one on the mortgage. Who has to move?
So if both parties are on the title, they both have a legal right to that. So regardless of who's paying the mortgage, if you're both on the title, you both have a legal right to that property. So you might want to get an agreement, right? Outside of that, it's going to protect your rights in the event of a dissolution of that relationship. So something that defines what happens in the event if the relationship ends, because you both have rights per the title. You're both on title.
So the object is, if you're not on the mortgage, make sure you get on the title. I gotcha. Okay, you know, this comes up a lot, too. So this is a question that's not on my questions. But this we hear a lot of times on leases. So I'm throwing you one that's not on there.
Okay.
On the leases, sometimes we have roommates, two or three, that are on a lease. And one decides to move out. And there's two left. It sounds like a childhood story, right? Three lived in a house. One moved out. There were two left. And they had a dog unauthorized, but we'll go there later. They performed a function. So, little pony. So, anyway, they move out. And then the two roommates move out. The third person's been gone for a long time. And all of a sudden, there's damage to the house. We go to all three. And
go back to the contract.
The third person says, I wasn't living there. I moved out a year ago. Well, guess what?
You're on the contract.
And which means?
You're still liable.
Thank you very much. I mean, that's the thing. When you're and we tell them all the time, if somebody moves out, okay, either we have to approve the change of a lease, and you can't just... It's like we talked about the dog earlier. You can't replace Buffy for Scruffy. You got to, if John and Tom and Steve are living there and Steve moves out, you can't bring in Alice. She has to be approved and the lease has to be revised. Yes?
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just, I mean, protects everybody, right?
Yeah.
Protects everybody's rights.
I mean, clarity is power, right? Clarity is power.
But she's only on our couch for like 2 weeks.
If it's 2 weeks and a day, she has to be on the lease. That is another point, by the way.
It's funny. I know that story word for word. Yeah. My friends went through it.
Yeah, 2 weeks is the maximum limitation. You know, if you're married and your mother-in-law wants to come stay, you can at least tell her to go home after 2 weeks. Otherwise, she's got to start paying rent. If you want to comment on that, call after the show is over, please. Jesse will take your call at 704-570-1110, and you can tell him all about it. There's one for you out there. I might have, you know. Oh, by the way, happy Father's Day to all you dads out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, yay. Okay. All right, here comes the big one, the one, the only. After the break, we're going to talk about adverse possession. This is not, you have 30 seconds to define it, and when we come back, what is it?
Great, 30
yeah.
seconds.
30, well, 24 now.
All right, so we've got open and notorious use, hostile use, exclusive use, continuous use, for the statutory period.
That's not adverse. That's complex. Possession. That's like schizophrenic possession. Okay, the show Your Real Estate Today. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Amber Holt, Paul Jamison, 1110-993 WBT. Welcome back here in the beautiful Charlotte region to the show Your Real Estate Today. Paul Jamison, your host, here with Amber Holt from Costner Law Firm. We are talking about real estate, and we're going through a series of questions. And we do have Beverly on the phone. We were thinking we'd probably get a question about the service animal thing. 704-570-1110. Beverly, we're going to just jump on your question really quickly. Thank you for calling.
What I was asking is, if you have a rental agreement with a renter that says no pets are allowed, and during the time of the lease, someone in the family becomes disabled and needs or wants a service animal, do you have to allow the service animal, or can you still say, I'm sorry, but the agreement is no pets allowed? How does this legally work?
So you're going to want to disclose that to who's renting to you. But, I mean, if you have a service animal and it meets those two requirements that we talked about earlier, then, I mean, you have a service animal, right?
And so you remember what those two things were?
No, so, I'm the one that would be renting to.
You're renting to.
She's the landlord.
Yeah,
and
so.
They say they have a service animal and I have to allow it.
So have you asked those two questions about, is this a service dog required because of a disability, and was it trained to do to do to mitigate that disability? What was it trained to do? Have you asked those two questions?
No, it hasn't happened yet. I'm just wondering what the law is. Is it allowed? Do we have to allow somebody, if they actually have a legal service animal, come in to play after they've rented from us saying no animals allowed?
You absolutely do.
Yes,
you absolutely do. So the American Disabilities Act, you absolutely do, because there's a need there, right? So if it's a service animal to provide a need to someone who has a disability, you do. And you can't ask about that disability. It's only those two questions that that legally you would be able to ask.
I understand. And then if they are allowed to have, say, a German Shepherd for the disability and they damage the place, that's...
I mean, the lease takes over at that point.
Sure.
Yeah.
So you would then have other provisions in your mm-hmm. lease agreement that would basically go to what happens if damages occur.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks. I just was curious if that comes up, how it's legally handled.
Yeah. Yeah, Beverly.
Absolutely. And call us at Costner Office if you have any additional questions or it comes up.
All right. Thank you.
Beverly. Take care. Good to hear from you.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. All right. That was a good question. Yeah. 704-570-1110. And the way Jesse's acting today, he needs something going on in here. That's what I'm saying. Okay. All right. What are you doing over there? Checking Facebook? Golly. There you are.
Heck no. I'm doing all my work.
Oh, okay. All right. Facebook. He's doing Facebook.
Heck no.
Okay.
I'm good
for it. Okay. All right. Adverse possession, Amber. Can you boil it down for me, the second grader?
All right. So the technical definition that I gave you earlier, it's pretty self-explanatory.
She did it in one breath, too, folks. That's why I started laughing. Okay, go ahead.
It was a little bit quick, but yeah, so the open and notorious use obviously just means that it's visible, right?
Okay.
So you're using it openly and notoriously. It's visible to anyone who would look go by. So basically, if the owner comes out there and does his annual newspaper check, right, stands in front of a newspaper with the day's date and takes a picture to say that he was there to make sure that 20 years doesn't accrue in North Carolina, if that happens, then essentially that's what you're trying to make sure that is there for the adverse possession.
Right.
Was it open and notorious so that he could go and see that you were using that property?
Right.
The hostile use that I was telling you about earlier in the elements, I know it sounds like something crazy, right? Like somebody went out with a shotgun.
Yeah.
It's not. It's
I'm
not like
taking your land whether you want
like
it or not.
All it means is you don't have permission to be there.
Right.
Right. So hostile just means that you don't have permission. The owner did not give you permission to utilize that.
Like
property.
The example I used at the break with the guy moving his benches and stuff onto the country club's property.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. To kind of take it over.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then exclusive use, so not you and 10 people are using this property, but you are using this property, right? So mm-hmm. it's not you and basically 10 other people are using it in the same way.
Yeah,
so
like
10 people are farming on it, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then, I'm not touching the pony. I'm just going to keep going. I'm going to keep rolling right over that. We love ponies. And then the continuous use, so continuous for the statutory period. So in North Carolina, that's 20 years.
Okay.
It varies by state, so it's not the same in every state.
Okay.
But here, and then there is one exception to that statutory period, that is color of title. And color of title just means that you have some type of documentation that made you believe that you had title to the property, but you didn't have good title. So that will drop that 20 years down to 7. That's your legal definition in a nutshell.
So all of those types basically means that under adverse possession, what all that really talks about is acquiring land that wasn't
mm-hmm.
yours. Right?
That became yours. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
By meeting all those elements.
Okay. Wow. Okay. That's, does it happen often?
I mean, it happens. I wouldn't say it happens often, but it happens. It usually happens in a little bit more rural areas, right, where someone's maybe farmed a little bit further and or taking care of some property that's wasn't theirs, but with their neighbors, and they moved, right? So it happens. But, you know, and if your neighbor asked you to take care, right, you might not have that hot, you might not meet that hostile because you've got permission.
Right.
So, again, it's got to be, you can't have permission to be there. It's got to be somebody who essentially just started using the property. And a good way to get around that is if you're, like I said earlier, if you're a property owner and it's your property, go out there with a newspaper, get the date on there, take a picture of it, they've got to show that they've been there for 20 years. And if you've been there and there was no fence, there was no partition, there was nothing showing that they were utilizing that property, then you've got proof that that 20 years couldn't be met. So right. Every year, take a paper out there and take a picture of yourself.
Yeah. Selfie.
Take a
Adverse
selfie.
Adverse selfie. Okay. Deposit. Oh, gosh, we got like a minute. All right. Is earnest money ever refunded? Deposits and earnest money ever refunded? I know the answer, and so do you. That's an easy one.
Sure. So if a party breaches, the EMD goes to the non-breaching party. So you'll look to the contract to see what constitutes that breach or termination. And then if the sale goes through, of course, the deposit is applied to the purchase price. So right. It'll be reflected in that also, the settlement statement.
Okay. And what are the tenant's rights on property being sold at a public sale?
So if the property that you're renting was sold because of a foreclosure, you will likely have to move, but not necessarily right away, right?
Right.
If you have a lease, you can stay until that lease ends. If you're month to month, you will receive that eviction notice, and then you will have 90 days before you have to vacate.
Right. Typically, the judge declares how long that lease will stay in place, and we have had what we call holdovers, but we've been able to take care of them, and they leave nicely. All right. So how do they get in touch with you, Amber, if they have a question for Costner Law Firm?
They can give us a call, 704-900-1130.
All right. And Jameson Property Management, Jameson Realty, Jameson Property Investments, 846-DONE, 846-3663. God bless. Happy Father's Day. See you next week.
Monday, it's a new episode of All Rise, the legal drama where one judge is shaking up the system.
When I take the bench, I'm taking a vow to fight for justice.
One case at a time.
Your Honor,
we're going to trial.
Simone Missick is Judge Lola Carmichael.
Up on that bench. Everything is different.
A new episode of All Rise.
Freedom is at stake.
It's important.
Followed by a new episode of Bull, Monday at 9, 8 central on CBS.